heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen to the everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. The doctor saving lives at your local hospital. The war veteran down the street who risked his lives for our freedom. The police officers and firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur. The creator. The producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what? I can fix that. I can help people. And I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to The Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks of the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence. So you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1. I'm here with Rochelle Shaw from the MDE, or Million Dollar Equation, which is a consulting firm that helps small businesses grow from wherever they are now to break that seven-figure ceiling that a lot of businesses want to crack. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
And my understanding is that you were, at one point in time, the only African-American woman who owned a public utility in the United States, which is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of fell into that, but I was for over almost 10 years. So I own the only public utility here in Las Vegas, Nevada, but I had customers all over the world who used our service. So that was fun.
Yeah. And you were telling me before we got on the interview that your goal is that you don't want to be the only African-American woman owner of large companies like that. You want to help women and people all over the world be able to get to that point in their business.
Absolutely. You know, the frustrating part is, you know, well, it all happened when I was very young. So it was about 20 years ago. So, it's hard to even say that was 20 years ago. But when it was happening and when you're in it, it's fun to be the only one. But now that I have kind of elevated what I want for other people, you know, life is not about just getting money. It's about helping others and seeing everybody succeed. Because number one, I read the story about Oprah who talked about it wasn't fun to be a millionaire by herself. So she gave her best friend $1 million. So because she got tired of paying everything, right? And once you get to that financial place, you start looking at other things and why I was so focused on just making money. You know, I built my first company over $40 million. And that's great. However, it doesn't solve all the problems that you want. So now I don't want to be the only one. Yeah, I want to make sure that there's many more of them out there just like me.
I've heard that the road to success can be a lonely path.
But so. It definitely is lonely because the people, you know, really funny story real quick is that before how I became the only is I worked for the company for couple of years. As the story was written in USA Today, Entrepreneur, Smart Money, and everybody else, they love to tell this story, is that I was dating three men in three different states and I had a high phone bill. And so I met this guy because every story with me starts with I met this guy. And he said, oh, come on, Rochelle, you know, come and work for me. And so I did. And I just kept growing the company. I ended up buying it from my boss. And all of the people who worked with me at the company were supposed to, they were rooting for me and we can't wait and we want you to own it. But then when I owned it, none of them came with me. None of them stayed with me. Mm-hmm. All of my friends that I went to lunch with every day who I thought we were the same, we actually weren't the same. They wanted to go to another company so that they could guarantee all of these things. And I guess they really didn't believe in me. So it was sad, but I mean, we're friends now, but during that
difference
path,
between the entrepreneur,
I didn't really understand why they didn't believe in me.
Yeah. It's that difference between that entrepreneur mindset and the employee mindset. They're not, you know, they're not on the same path that you would be on.
No, definitely not.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you do now? So when we get into your hero story and get to see your journey, we have an idea so we can see where you are now versus where you came from. So what is it that you do now for people?
Oh, awesome. So I do a couple of things. One of them is I'm definitely a writer because what ended up happening is people kept asking me, well, Rochelle, you know, how are you able to build up to $40 million? I lost it all, by the way, after 9/11 and the tragedies happened. But then I rebuilt back my $1 million business in about 5 months. So I kept getting this story. Well, how did you do that? Well, tell us about it. So I decided to write it in books. So now I write books for entrepreneurs. And I think I got one over here. So this one is my latest one that's out there. It's kind of backwards now, but it is called The $1 Million Equation. And then I have my current one, which is $1 Million Equation for Doctors. And what I really want to do is help as many people as I can. My goal is 10,000 businesses all reaching the $1 million level. That's my first one. And then my second one will be 1 million businesses reaching the $1 million level, because there's a lot of things that happen once you get there. So in my agency, what we do is we look at your business, what's going on in your business, and then we plug all the holes and I apply my $1 million equation to your business, because there's only three ways to grow. That's it. Three ways. First one is get new customers. The second one is get your existing customers to come back and spend more money, right? And then the third way is get your existing customers to spend more while they're with you with every transaction. That's it. There's nothing else. So in my telephone business, I was consistently looking for other products and services that I could sell to my existing base, but also at the same time, making sure that they were paying every month with the continuity, which is great. And then the last one is adding new, so that I was able to grow very, very quickly because I focused on only those three things. So that's what I do for my clients now.
That's awesome. So I love that, by the way, because, you know, the first time I heard that was from Jay Abraham, and one of his preeminence and things was, you know, the only three ways to grow companies. And that's what, you know, I focus on and I help my clients focus on. And It's a powerful thing when you focus on the things that matter, the things that move the dial. So
things that are going to get you the money, you know, I mean, I have, and we'll talk about them in the tool section of today, but some of the things that I use it every single day, I work on to make sure that not only me and my company is growing, but my clients' companies are growing in the same way.
Yeah. So, why don't you tell me how you got started? You know, I call this on the show that your origin story, every hero has one, you know, where you started to realize that you were different, that maybe you had superpowers, that maybe you could use those to help other people. And you started to discover and develop the value that you could bring to this world.
Gosh, you know what? It happened really early. My mother is a waitress. My father was kind of entrepreneurial, but never really kind of got it right. My stepfather is an industrial realtor, though, and he was very successful with real estate. But I knew from the very beginning that I was going to own a business. Now, I was always an honorary little kid, so that, you know, I called my teachers by their first name. I never called her Mrs. Strucker. I was like, Suzanne, hello. What are we doing? And they just put their head down and, oh, that's Rochelle, you know, don't worry about it. But I asked a lot of questions. I was constantly going, that doesn't make sense to me. So show me how that makes sense. And then we'll go with your way, even though I was extremely young at the time. But the first job I had was I worked for a management consulting firm. And all I did was answer the phone for them and type their reports. So they would bring in the problems and I would, you know, type in what their answers were. So as I would read it, I'd go, well, of course, this makes a lot of sense. But what we found was that most businesses, when they get in the middle of it, they don't get it. Mm-hmm. So my second job was at a huge aerospace company while I was at UCLA. And I worked in the accounts payable department. And my job was, as long as I had a purchase order, a bill of lading, and an invoice, that I could push the button. Now, here I am, 19 years old. I could push the button to make sure that they got paid. Like, how does that work? You're going to let me, a part-time person, push the button? But I was happy to have the job while I was going to school. And my best friend worked in the accounts receivable department. So we're sitting in the lunchroom and the vice president comes in and he says, you know, well, hi, I haven't met you yet. And I said, no, you know what? I'm just a student and I'm here part-time working in accounts payable. And he says, well, you know, we're happy to have you. He said, well, Rochelle, do you have any questions for me? And I giggled and I said, yeah, I've got a question. And he goes, all right, well, I'm all open. You know, how can I help you? I said, well, here's what I don't understand is that there are 15 people working in my department, which is accounts payable, but there's only 3 people working in accounts receivable. So can you tell me why you pay more people to pay out your money than you pay to collect your money? That doesn't make sense to me. And he looked at me and he went, oh, well, that's a good question, which is what people say when they don't know the answer, right? And so, you know, 2 weeks later, we all got laid off, by the way, me and my friends, and they flipped it. So then the other 10 people that got to stay went to accounts receivable, and the 3 people that got to stay stayed in accounts payable. And I was out of a job, and my best friend was out of a job. So she was pretty mad at me, but I realized that there was something that, as you say, I might have some superpowers. Now, fast forward to probably 2 years later, I was working for an entrepreneur who let me run his company. I wrote all of our ads. I'm crazy. And we built his company in 4 months' time from zero to over $1 million. And I went, okay, he's at work every day. I'm working for him. And I'm still, how does this work? But I wasn't confident enough to believe that I could do it on my own. You know, I wrote a business plan. This is a really quick one too. And gave it to my best friend. And it was all about, they have a company out there that's 1-800-DENTIST. So I came up with 1-800-KIDCARE. And you would call the number and we would give you where you could take your kid for childcare. And the childcare centers would pay to be in the directory. I sent out a letter to all the daycare centers, surveyed them. How did I do that before I knew that what I was doing? But I just came up with this brilliant idea to survey them. They told me how much they would pay. They told me that they couldn't wait for a service like this. And they asked to be included in the directory. Well, I was a little nervous about doing it myself because at this point I'm only like 22 and I don't think I can do this. And I gave it to my best friend who was an early childhood education major. She was graduating from college. She ended up working in the county of Riverside for the Riverside County for them. And they came to her and said, you know, we need to figure out a way to get the information to parents about all of our childcare programs. And she, in her infinite wisdom, gave my business plan to the county. Well, they loved it and they funded, they got Target, the Target Corporation, Target Stores, the Bullseye, to give them $500,000 to implement my plan. They didn't hire me. They didn't bring me in. They gave my best friend a job though. So she got a job making 40 something thousand. So she calls me and says, you won't believe I got the job. And I'm like, what job? She goes, well, I gave them your plan. And aren't you excited for me? I'm making $40,000 a year now. I go, no, we could have got the $500,000. Are you kidding me? And so at that point, I knew that I was on the right track, but I wasn't still, as crazy as this is, I doubted how brilliant and what my superpowers, as you call them, really were.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible that you would have such a, I don't know, I just see the struggle from, you know, you've got something, but you haven't quite got the confidence to put that together and like just connect them. So that's really powerful. And just like I love how you talked about questioning people and questioning, you know, the common wisdom. And, you know, this, I reminded me of a story when I was 14 or 15 years old. I was in an accounting class in high school. And, you know, the way they teach accounting is not like, it's not real world accounting. It's it's theoretical accounting. And, right, you know, like I remember they were defining, the teacher was defining assets. And I know he said something along the lines of your home is an asset. And I raised my hand in class and I was like, if your home's an asset, why does it cost you money every month? And I was like, that sounds like a liability to me. And I argued with my teacher with it for for weeks. And he was like, no, they teach you that your house is an asset. And I was like, the equity might be an asset, but on your expense statement, it's coming out of your money. It's putting taking money out of your pocket every month. That makes it a liability in my book. I was like, it's the bank's asset. They're making money on you every month.
That's right.
And
But
also,
and it doesn't really turn into an asset until you get to keep it, until it is actually, until you get that deed, as far as I'm concerned. But so many folks, they think that that's the only asset that you're ever going to have, and that's how you're going to retire. And so you have to consider it this asset. Well, really, really quick is that after I lost it all, I went back to UNLV because I thought that maybe it was because I didn't have an MBA and all of this self-doubt stuff again. And I was in an accounting class, and I was the only one to get 100% on a test because the answer was a negative net receivable, right? And so the professor said, "Well, Rochelle, how did you know that?" I said, "Well, because I owned a business that has a negative net receivable. That's how, because I know that everything doesn't line up exactly how you say in theory. That yes, it sounds like if you here are making money." But I also ran a multi-million dollar business that had a loss every year. So the key is, as long as you have cash flow, you can always be open. But it's how much you get to take, how much you get to keep, there's so many other things in real life practicality that happens that they don't teach in college. And I was constantly frustrated throughout that whole process.
So, the story of how you sort of have discovered your superpowers despite the years of self-doubt and struggle and stuff is really interesting. So, I'm going to move on a little bit and talk about the tools that you use now, right? The things that you've discovered over those years of struggle. I've in the hero show we talk about, maybe you have a big magical hammer like Thor, or a bulletproof vest like your neighborhood police officer. Or maybe you just love how you use Evernote, or maybe you've got some psychological tools that you use with your business. What are the tools that you use to either run your business or help your clients run theirs on a regular basis?
Got it. Well, because the story starts with all of that self-doubt, I had to fix that piece in my head. And it was something that I work on still to this day, is I put on what I call my mental armor. And I start every single morning with the same, way. And that is, number one, I read the Bible. I happen to be a Christian, and I believe that the things that are in the Bible are the things that are going to help me stay focused. Because when you go from a 27-year-old that's dating three men in three different states to now owning a $40 million company, being sued by WorldCom for over $1 million, to all of these things, you start going, well, hold on a second, how did I get here? And I knew I was smart, but where are my powers? So I needed to focus on those things. So I definitely start with that. At the end of every day, I write down all of my accomplishments for that day. Because as an entrepreneur, your list is never ending. We all start with lists, and we've got tasks, and then we've got projects, and then we've got projects upon tasks. And I happen to be I have entrepreneurial ADD is what I call it. So I'm constantly running to 50 different things. And at the end of the day, I never felt accomplished because that list is never ending. So I write down all that I accomplished for the day. I write down five things that I was grateful for the day, because sometimes it's I'm just grateful for gas in my car. And other days it's, I'm grateful for gas in my car, because as entrepreneurs, everything is always at risk. Everything is at risk. And for our kids' college, our retirement, everything. So it's making sure that we stay grateful. And then I write down, the certain things that made me uncomfortable for the day. Because I think that those are important too, is what is it that creates this angst inside of me? And then how did I, deal with it? Did I push through it? Did I not push through it? So that every day I'm trying to get better. And that one tool has really changed my life, because for years I just always felt unaccomplished. Even at the $40 million level, I wanted to get to $100 million, right? I wanted to get to $1 billion. It was never enough. And so I had a daughter, and now my daughter comes first. I mean, everything that I do is, you know what? Hey, sorry, I'm going to either be late or, you know, but what I teach her is to start off the day being grateful, in the day, reviewing your accomplishments and just competing with yourself, not with anybody else. You know, is this okay with you? Did what you did it make sense? Did you affect another person's life? And then how can we get better tomorrow?
Yeah, I really love that, because I know when I, one of the things, you know, you mentioned, you accomplish all these things, but your list is never ending. And I know I feel that, and I don't do that at the end of the day where I write down my accomplishments, something that I should probably start doing. But I know I'll get to, you know, I'll go through and accomplish a whole bunch of things. And every time I knock off, you know, knock off a task and get a project done, I've got 10 more that are on my list.
That's right.
And I'm like, my wife is always asking me, like, so when are you going to be done? And I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to be done ever. Like, because there's more things I want to do.
It seems that way. And, you know, my pastor said something one day, and it really kind of, I mean, it rocked me. And he said, you know, success and failure feel the same way. I said, no, that's not true. You know, I just wanted to know, I was ready to raise my hand again. And he said, hear me out. I said, okay, tell me, what is that? Because I know success, and I know when I lost it all, that it felt dramatically different. He said, well, then tell me how it felt when you reached $10 million in revenue. And I said, I don't remember. He said, okay, tell me how it felt when you reached 40. Yeah, I don't remember. He said, and you also told me, Rochelle, that back in the day, that when you reached 1 million, you didn't even know you had reached it. One day you just decided to run a report. Is that true? I said, that's true. He said, so at the end of the day, if you don't create your own joy and happiness and understand what those accomplishments are, it will feel exactly the same, because at 10 million, you'll feel like you should have reached 20, and you will kick yourself for that. Mm-hmm. And at 20 million, you'll be mad that you didn't reach 100. So you'll kick yourself for that. And when I thought back and processed it, that's exactly what was happening. Is I never felt that it was enough. And even when now as I'm rebuilding my agency and getting to the levels that I am, I always, you know, want to compare them to building my telephone business. And there were days when I felt unaccomplished and that, oh, you know, who wants to interview me, really? Now, I do a financial segment on our local Fox 5 here on The Money Honey. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on twice a month. I am so accomplished. I have number one best-selling books. I've helped an OBGYN build his practice from 384,000 to 1.2 million in 9 months. Who wakes up and says, I can't wait to have a pap smear? Nobody, right? But just using all of the things that I know how to do, I've helped him do that, but I still felt as if I wasn't accomplished, because success and failure really do feel the same way unless we create something to make them feel differently.
Which is really powerful, because it brings to light, you know, that it's all here. You know, what you're doing is not going to make you feel different. It's, you know, one of my mentors always used to say was, between stimulus and response, there's choice. Mm-hmm. And the way that you feel is a choice that you make. And, you know, correct. If your stimulus is failure, or your stimulus is success, the response that you have to that is something that you have to choose, something you have to create, which is what I think what you were saying.
Exactly.
That you have, exactly. You're not going to just automatically have a joyful response to success, because there's that choice, right, in the middle. And if you're not choosing the response, you're going to end up having the default, you know, the response you have to stimulus of anything with work, you know, is if it's traditionally failure, because, you know, you go failure, 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 success. That's how success works. Your mind is, right, trained to respond with the same feelings to success as you have to failure. Unless you change that choice, you're going to have the same unfulfilled feelings towards your accomplishments.
Yes. And so one of the other tools that I use all the time too is that I define what success is to me. You know, so success is being able to take my kid every day to school and pick her up from school every single day. And so there's some that does that mean that I don't really travel to speak anymore? Look, I live in the town where everybody comes to. So yeah. I speak on a ton of stages because they're here in Las Vegas, and I can still take her to school every day and pick her up so that she knows that she's very important and she's a priority in my life. It makes some people uncomfortable because they're like, why? Well, you know, you should be. And I know what I should be. And I also know that what defines success for me, mm-hmm. you know, success isn't being 120 pounds for me either, obviously. But that doesn't mean that I'm not cute. That just means that that's not success for me. Success for me is being able to be good to people, to affect people. You know, my daughter, one of the conversations that we have all the time is not what do you want to do in your life? You know, because of course she sees me and she's like, oh, I want to be on TV and I want to write books and I want everybody to see me on the internet. And I'm like, yeah, no, you know, why don't you tell me what problem you want to solve? Why don't you tell me that? And as soon as you tell me that, then we'll create this this way of how to solve the problem. So as I thought about, you know, what problem do I want to solve? That's where all these other things came. That's how I became famous or whatever you want to call it. But it's not because I wanted to become famous. Because here's what I found out very, very early is that you become famous way before you become rich. Yeah. And so now you've got all these eyes on you. And then this race to wear better clothes, to carry more expensive bags, that, you know, and for women, it's definitely crazy of all of the success and the people who come out of you. You know, from the very first article that was written about me, I got two letters from jail. Two guys who said, oh, I see that you don't have a ring on your finger. Well, I'm in from a nonviolent offense and all this craziness. I'm going, really? You know, is fame really what I want? And I had to come back to, yeah, no. What I'd like to is have a different framework for my success.
Yeah, and I really love that because when you talk about success is something that you define, one of the things that I always tell myself and I tell my kids and I even tell my wife is, you know, anyone I talk to, he who controls the definition controls the argument. And yep. When it comes to things like how you feel about your success and how you feel about yourself.
Are you tired of trying to write webinars that don't consistently convert? How would you like to have a webinar that effortlessly created sales in your online business? You can. Introducing the Webinar Alchemy Workshop. Webinar Alchemy Workshop is an online masterclass that will help you write incredibly persuasive webinars for your online courses quickly and easily. Using what you learn in this class, you can build a webinar that educates your entire audience while still creating sales. For a limited time, you can purchase this masterclass for only $7, and you'll get the exact framework I've personally used to help my clients sell more than $1 million worth of online coaching and training just over the last year. Simply text the word Alchemy, A-L-C-H-E-M-Y, to 444-999, and I'll send you all the details.
The music is by Purple Planet Music. Visit www.purple-planet.com.
You know, anyone I talk to, he who controls the definition controls the argument. And yep. When it comes to things like how you feel about your success and how you feel about yourself, when you control your own definitions and you don't let the world define things for you, then you have a much better, you know, understanding of like where you are and where you want to go. And I know, like you mentioned for yourself, you want to take your daughter to school every day. For me, it's like, I want to be able to have lunch with my kids every day. And you know, I've got a little boy and a little girl. And I made that commitment before I had children with my wife, and I was like, I'm going to be here for lunch every day, right? That's my goal. I mean, you know, and every once in a while, I've got something I got to do over lunch. So I think over the last 6 years, I've missed like 5 or 6 lunches, but that's my goal. And everything I've done from jobs, business, where I work, what I do, has always, you know, my definition of success is I get to have lunch with my wife and my kids. And
I love
that. Yeah, I don't have, you know, I don't make $1 million yet, Right. And I don't have, you know, fancy cars and cool jewelry and, you know, boats and all that other cool like trappings of success. But it's, you know, maybe someday. And but if I don't get to have lunch with my kids, having all those things wouldn't matter. Right. It's because I know what success is, and you do too. And I think that's a really powerful thing.
Yeah, I flew all over the world teaching, speaking, all kind of stuff. And then I realized that, you know, wait a minute, you know, that my kid loves my mom more than she loves me. Well, not that she loves her, but that she's used to spending more time with her. Then, and I said, oh, this is wrong. No. You know, this little thing is my joy. She's like why I'm doing it. So, okay, then why am I not spending time with her? And I really had to sit down and think about that. And so even if I don't pick her up from school, like it's a big thing. She's what's going on? You know, mommy's not here. And so I had to kind of have that conversation with her, is that, you know, somebody else picks you up. It doesn't mean that I'm hurt or something's wrong. It just means that, you know, somebody else is going to pick you up. So I have to like tell her or leave a note. I'll go to the school and leave a note for her so that she knows everything's okay, but so and so is going to pick you up. But as you said, it's my but 5 or 6 times in the last, well, she's 10, so she's in fourth grade. So, you know, I've been there every single day
Yeah,
in
and
the
it's one of those things that like when you make a decision like that, when you decide what success is, it defines a lot of things. So like because I didn't say I wanted to have dinner with my kids every day, it was lunch. That defined a lot of things, right? So like
Yeah.
my kids are homeschooled because if they're going to a public school, I can't have lunch with them.
Yep.
Which means I need to have be able to take care of my family in such a way that my wife can stay home and actually do that.
Yeah.
You know, I need to have working conditions where I can take lunch off. So I'm like making a decision like that changes a lot of how you make decisions based on, you know, for your business.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you are defining success as, you know, I want to make this certain amount of money or you want to have this certain thing, you know, that's it's going to affect the decisions you make.
Sure.
So.
Well, you know, and part of, so one of the other big pieces of my tool belt is, you know, because a lot of folks, if when they're not where we are, in their head wise, they're like, well, tell me the tool. Don't tell me it's all in my mind. So here's one of the tools that I also use, is that no matter what, I go into every single business and create systems that work without me, so that when I am not sitting in front of my computer, I'm still making money. So I start with, you know, okay, let's break the business down into 3 segments: before they meet me, while they're doing business with me, and then after they meet me. How can I make sure that they are loving me, telling everybody what an amazing person I am, telling everybody what an amazing, you know, experience they had with our company, and sharing all of their results? What am I doing? So I break down those 3 segments, and once a week I work on each one of the segments so that either I'm adding another email sequence, I'm filming testimonials with my clients, or I am making sure that the experience that they have while they're working with us makes a whole lot of sense. So if you're really, you know, anxious to build that $1 million business, and if the money is your goal, then you want to make sure that you are looking at systems in your business, your practice, your firm, whatever you call it, and that you are getting automatic payments somewhere so that you don't have to be the one doing it. Because as long as it has to touch somebody's hand, it's going to limit how much money you get to take home. Not how much you make, because you can always hire more people to do it, but how much you get to take home and be able to be at home at lunch with your kids every day.
Yeah, and I really love the whole idea of automation. It's one of you know it's what I build my business on is helping people build automations into their business, like really cool things. Like you know you want to you a customer buys from you, how can you have a system that automatically sends them a postcard that's handwritten that says thank you, but it's all automated, and like you can do things
Right.
like that nowadays. And you know
Absolutely.
I do like one of the things in my business because I do solopreneur work, so I don't have a team. I outsource things occasionally when I need to get something done, but because I do one-on-one coaching, it you know part of the work it involved is like I need to schedule appointments with people, and you know I have them fill out an application ahead of time, and I actually you know you build the whole system in place where they get reminded to fill out the application 3 or 4 times, and it even like text messages them with, you know, half the application filled out with the information that I have already. And after they fill out the application, it follows up with them 3 or 4 times to make sure that they get onto my calendar. And after they've gotten to my calendar, they get a bunch of personal messages from me that's, you know, filled in with the information they've given. And you build those systems once and you never have to touch them again. And now I don't have to use my own effort to scale the customer acquisition part of my business because you built the systems first. It's front-loaded effort. Takes a lot of thought and a lot of practice, and then you have to go on from there.
Right. Well, you're right. But so many people don't want to do that. They just want to go and get, go and get a customer and keep going. And what I tell them is that, without a system, then you don't have a saleable business. One of the things that why I'm so where I am is that I was able to sell all three of the businesses that I owned, so that it's paying me in dividends. That's my retirement. That's the asset that I have, as we talked about assets. And without the systems, you'll never be able to sell the business that you have. You just have a glorified job. But with the systems, then people want it. They want to know, that your acquisition process is automated and it's easier to sell.
Absolutely. So
what a lot of
I'm
fun.
going to move on a little
Lots of
bit
fun.
to your mission with the MDE. I know you talked about it a little bit with, wanting to get to 10,000 people at 7 figures. But just like, Spider-Man fights to save New York, or Batman fights to save Gotham, or Google fights to index all of the information in the entire world so you can search from it from your phone. What tell us more about your mission, dive into a little bit, and why you want to accomplish that 10,000, and what you think it's going to do to the world when you accomplish that goal.
Yeah, well, so part of my passion projects are a couple of that. I for almost 2.5 years was the president of the National Association for Moms in Business, and working for that organization and being their president and representing them in Congress and in meetings with the president of the United States and all over the world, is that I found that if we lift up a woman and a mom, that we can lift her family, change her family perspective. After we change the family, then we're now changing communities. And as we change communities, we change the world. And it really struck me, and it made me say, okay, so what can I do personally to make sure that we can change the world? So one of my things is not only entrepreneurship. I think that everybody who has a right, that if they're risking their retirement, their kids, their wife being able to stay home, all of that they should be able to generate the 7 figures that I generated. So that's what I wrote the books for. But now, at the age that I am, I've had some people not make it. So I had two of my best friends pass away from cancer recently. My father passed away over 1.5 years ago. And when he came home from the hospital, he came too early. And he called 911, and he was able to get to the door to allow the fire department to come in. But he passed away right there in with them trying to resuscitate him. After that, we were all after the funeral at my mother's house, and she announced to us that she found a lump in her breast. And we've been on that journey with her. She's doing much better now, but it shocked me as I sat in doctor's practices after doctor's practices, and I noticed that the doctor feels compelled to see as many patients as he can because that's their only way that they know how to grow their practice. And what happens is that they're not giving the best service, that they're just not doing it. And so that really compelled me to write the latest book, The Million Dollar Equation for Doctors, and to go in to help them build better practices so that they can be better doctors and to give better care. Because right now, I don't think that they're giving better care. I think that they're just trying to check it off their list. There are some, but the majority of them in the appointments that I've been to with family members, with friends during all of their cancer journey, have been, okay, well, what does it say? And they're just checking the items off, and they're not really listening to what's going on. The effect of all of that is several of my physicians' practices have exploded because when the patient gets there, they get unlimited time with the doctor. They are feeling better. They're doing all the things that they need to do to really help. And I think if we can fix our broken healthcare right now, that we can really change the world. We can affect so many additional people. And I'm super passionate about it right now, as well as, you know, of course, helping entrepreneurs. But I think that I have put out so much information on that if you just, you know, read the Green Book, the $1 million equation, that you could build your own $1 million business. But this one with the doctors, nobody teaches them how to
strike some hard chords.
Practice. Yeah, it's tough.
So what's really interesting to me about that is you said something that I think is really key, and if people can catch it, is the doctors are struggling to provide the best care because in the back of their mind, they're thinking, I need to get to the next patient. I need to grow my business. And because they don't have the systems in place to grow their business and to basically to have predictable, regular growth and profits and revenues, that's always going to be at the forefront of their mind, and it gets in the way of them providing their value. And I think that's the same for almost any entrepreneur. It doesn't matter what your business is. If your thought process is, I need to figure out, you know, as soon as you land a client, before you even got to deliver value to them, they've said yes. Your thought is, I need to make sure I get to the next client because this one's not going to pay the bills by themselves. So when you're trying to deliver value to them, you've got like a screen in front of you. You're not able to be there present. And I think that's a really powerful point when you realize that you need to get your systems taken care of so you can provide whatever value it is. You know, and it's particularly important in the healthcare industry because you're talking about people's lives. You know, if you're providing that value to the highest level possible, you need to have the rest of your business taken care of so you can be present for them, for your customers. Yes.
Yeah, it's so important. That's why I said I'm just super passionate about it. I think you can tell that I'm like, ugh, because I it doesn't have to be this way. And when I see that, you know, that the people are waiting an hour and a half to be seen, that's ridiculous. You know, who wants to come back to you? When every time I come that I've made you a priority, but you haven't made me a priority. And we've been helping a lot of practices, but I think in the end, what we've really done is help so many patients, you know, feel better and get better because they feel as if their doctor is listening to them and they feel as if, okay, finally, I'm going to be able to feel better.
It's a ripple effect for your business.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, absolutely. Thank you for sharing your mission. I really enjoy what it is that you're trying to do, and I love to hear those stories. Talk a little bit about your personal heroes, right? People who have been an influence in your life. You know, I say Frodo had Gandalf, Luke had Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? And Robert Kiyosaki had his rich dad. Who were your heroes? Were they real life mentors? Were they other speakers or authors, peers that were just a few years ahead of you? And how important were they to what you've accomplished so far?
Yeah, well, you know, my heroes were those who believed in me before I believed in myself. I mean, because we talked about, you know, that head thing that I had going on, but my very first job at the consulting firm, you know, they told me, you know what, Rochelle, you're special. And as soon as you believe it, things will change for you. It took me 20 years, but I definitely had that. My very first boss, at the tax firm that he just kind of let me do my thing and we grew it very quickly. You know, he's still a hero for me. My boss at the telephone company before I bought it from him, you know, he sat there and he said, you know, Rochelle, I got something to tell you. He was older at the time. So he was 50 in his late 50s. And here I am 27, you know, and he says, here's the deal. I'm going to let you do anything you want. Just don't put me out of business. And all I heard was, you can do anything you want. And I never thought of just don't put me out of business. And I really think through, you know, how difficult it was. But he never gave me, here's what you need to do. He just said, I believe in you. And so I have learned so much from that. If you talk to any employees who's ever worked for me, they all say, you know, Rochelle, you believed in me before I believed in myself. So that's how I pay it forward. Mm-hmm. But they were definitely my heroes, my mentors. He was my Obi-Wan Kenobi, as I could call him and go, oh, well, I screwed up. And he's like, it's okay. You're going to screw up here. Let's work yourself out of it. Let's fix it for you. So, I had some definite, just infinite wisdom folks who just helped me, you know. Another one of them was Reginald L. Lewis, which I read a book where he talked about, he used to own TLC Beatrice. He was the first African-American on the stock exchange, that whole thing. And he said, one of the problems that most people have is that they want to create it from scratch. And he told me to just go buy it. So since then, I've purchased 4 different businesses based on that advice. Instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, I just go and buy a business that already has flowing cash flow, because I understand the operation. I understand the systems that you talk about. Mm-hmm. So that now we can keep things going. And they were definitely a huge influence, and they help me now give back, because now I know what to tell folks when they come to me.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go, I don't know. Now I go, okay, here's the deal. You know, you can do this. You can definitely get to where you want. So, and you know, do I still coach? Absolutely. You know, there are only a select few that get to coach with me, just because my agency blew up the done for you side of it. Mm-hmm. But I definitely still do one-on-ones with folks, just to get them past that hump and let them know that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Awesome. So I want to bring it home a little bit for our listeners. And last little bit of our interview is talk about your guiding principles. So what are the top 1 or 2 principles or actions that you use regularly today that contribute to the success and the influence that you enjoy? And maybe the ones that you wish you had known when you first started out on your hero's journey.
Perfect. You know, my number one is do the right thing at all times. Because when you happen to be a superpower, in theme of your show, you get a lot of opportunities. Some of them are right and some of them are wrong. Mm-hmm. And I spent some time doing some things that weren't right. And they made a ton of money. But what I found was, number one, they're not sustainable. And I spent a whole lot of time and energy doing things that weren't right, instead of really focusing all of my skills doing what's right. And when you do that, everything else comes to you. And the second one is understand that there is a higher power. I don't care what you decide to call him or her or the universe, whichever. I happen to know that my higher power comes from God and Jesus Christ, and that he died for me. And to know that he died for me so that I could do something in my life, that's where I started to work on, you know, what problems are you solving? And even in all of my books, I start out with how to build a really, you know, great business that grows quickly is solve enough problems. What's your great solution, your 1GS? What is it? What problem are you solving for the world? Because when you do that, people will throw money at you. You don't have to worry about, you know, charging the right amount or getting the next product. It's just make sure that you can solve their problems and they can get there.
Absolutely. I love that, the one great solution. And I used to, one of the mentors that I follow, he talks about your only goal in business is to find a group of people who have a problem and develop a elegant solution for them. And that's it. That's business.
That's it. And people want to complicate it, you know, and we all say it in different ways, but it comes down to, if as long as you're solving their problem, they will pay you.
Yeah.
It's when we stop solving the problems, when they go, well, wait a minute, hold on, you know, why I don't need to pay you anymore. Mm-hmm. Same way, telephone business, same way with my doctors. You know, it's not that you have to get them well, but you definitely have to listen to them and assess what's going on in their business so that you can change their life.
Absolutely. So last little thing on the webinar, I do this every time, something I call the Hero Challenge. And okay. It's really simple. It's, do you know one person Just one person that you could introduce to me that you think their story would be a good fit for our show.
Always, always. I probably know 15. So I'll get at least a couple of them to talk to you so that we can make sure that they can tell their hero story and help change the world. Because I love your mission, I love what you're doing, and just keep doing it. It matters. It matters to everybody who's out there that was like me. I wish I had a show like this that I could listen to, that I could watch, that I could see, that I should just take the leap because I would have done it, 10 years earlier and not kind of fallen into it. But there's an opportunity, and I think you're doing justice for our community. So I can't wait.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. And it's something that it was I tell a lot of people that interview with me, the origin story for this show. It was like 2007 one time, and I was listening to a speaker, and I swear he pointed right to me in the audience of like 10,000 people, and he was like, "Your kids are gonna have a hero someday, and it damn well better be you." And I thought about that for the longest time, and I realized that if you were going to be a hero to your kids, they're gonna choose who their influences are. And if you're not worthy of having influence, they're gonna choose someone else. And that goes for everyone in your life, whether that's your customers or your children or the people you have relationships with. If you're not worthy of having influence in someone's life, they're not going to choose you to be that influence. They're going to choose someone else. So that's sort of where my whole, I started, got into the entrepreneur career, 15, 7 years, I don't even know how long ago, it was a long time ago, because of someone pointing at me and saying, "Hey, you got to be a hero." So that's sort of where, the name for the show came from. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Rochelle. Last thing, where can people find you if they want to read your book, The Million Dollar Equation, or The Million Dollar Equation for Doctors, or they want to find out about some of the things that you teach? Where can they find you? Where can they find your books? And just let us know where they can do that.
Awesome. So I'm really easy to find, as long as you spell my name right. So it is RICHELLE, Shaw, SHAW.com. So you can go to RochelleShaw.com. You can also go to the MDE, the agency, if you'd like us to help you with your practice, with your business. There's an application there because I also use an automated application process to make sure that we're the right fit. Because if it's not, then I don't want to waste your time either. You can grab my books on Amazon because they are there too. You can go to the official Rochelle Shaw on Facebook. That's there. You can tweet at me at Rochelle Shaw. It's just the same thing. But even if you spell it wrong, I think you do kind of find me somewhere in
In the
the
search
mix.
results.
But I would love to help whoever it is, become their own hero to their children, to themselves, because that's how I needed to become it to me, because I didn't really believe I was a hero until now. I believe that I'm a hero. I believe that I am here to affect lives and to affect change. And so I can't wait to help you if that sounds good to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me on the show.